It's Learning to Listen with Quinn, Naomi, and Charlie.
Hell yeah. You know what I'm saying? That's how Dr. Dre started off, the Chronic. Nine Deuce. Hell yeah. Know what I'm saying? All right, welcome to L2L, Learning to Listen, the podcast. We're talking all about music and the way we listen to music. We're trying to engage with the music we listen to. We're all about the lost art of engaged listening. So that's why we're talking about albums and consuming the album as a whole artistic statement, the way artists intended. So this is not a biography show. Plenty of podcasts out there that do that. They got it covered. What we're doing instead is we're listening to music and we're giving you our pure, guttural, visceral reaction to the music we're listening to. That was a little redundant, but anyway. So today we got a guest on the show. We're going to be talking all about Milo Goes to College, the 1982 album by The Descendants. But before we do that, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Quinn. You guys might know me. I've also got Charlie with me today, DJ Charlie Scream.
Charlie Scream.
Yeah. And then, of course, Naomi is not with us tonight. She sends her best regards. But because we were going to talk about a punk rock album tonight, she opted out. She was like, nope, can't do it. Fuck that.
Yeah, she was all like,
oh, I need to be fucking, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So she sends her love.
Maybe if it was a Bon Jovi kind of thing, maybe we could.
Then it would be like
being moist. She, all the
she'd
time
be like, right in.
Okay, yeah. So, like I said, we do have a guest today. Our guest is Jamie Vincent. We're going to be talking all about Milo Goes to College by The Descendants. But before that, patreon.com/learningtolisten. Yeah. You guys really helps us out if you head on down there. I don't know, throw a few bucks at us. Consider it like the busking version of podcasting, you know? Like, you strolled on by a couple of times. You heard a couple of things you liked. You know what? You got a little change in your pocket. Why not help us out, huh? We're just trying to get beer money. Like, that's all we're trying to do. You can appreciate somebody trying to get a little beer money. Well, you want to send us some beer money?
I can, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Patreon.com/learningtolisten. Okay. Thank you very much, Charlie. All right. Jamie Vincent.
Hello.
How is it going, man?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Just played a festival, I guess, last weekend. It was pretty good. I've been writing a lot for the Dino Waves.
Yeah, so the Dino Waves, you sent me a link to your EP. Yeah. The album is, or the EP is called Big Sun. Yeah. It's out on Tarantula Tapes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the band, man. You know, when you sent me the link, having known you for a few years and heard some of your other bands or whatever, I was not expecting a surf band.
You were expecting like a grind band or something, I imagine.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was like, there's got to be some hardcore elements to this or something.
yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
What got you into surf?
Well, I don't know. I've always been into surf, really. You know, it's just, I always ended up in like hardcore bands and stuff like that. The noise bands and punk bands, it's just because the people that I was hanging around with, they needed a bass player or something, or I wanted to write a punk song, be in a punk band. I wanted to be in a punk band kind of thing. So, but I've always really liked, you know, the Beach Boys and the Ventures and things like that. So I moved here, you know, I moved back here about 10 years ago, maybe something like that, 11 years ago. And there was a surf band in town called Dino Waves. And I just thought they were awesome. They were doing all kinds of like surf covers, but they were kind of gritty with it. Like, you know, distorted bass and, you know, distorted guitars and just like heavier drums and stuff like that. So I wanted to be in that band. So I just messaged them. I'm like, can I be in your band? And then they're like, yeah, sure. Let's have a chat about it or whatever. And then, so now I'm in the band, and it's been fun. Cause like I can creatively write in the band too. That's like one of my things that I really like to do. Yeah. So we have a lot of originals now. We don't really do too many covers. We do though. Like yeah, obviously well, the covers are
a tradition in surf music. Like when I think about
Adventures. Oh yeah, it is.
Adventures definitely had originals, but their bread
it's all
and butter
covers, really.
Yeah, their bread and butter was doing instrumental surf versions of the pop songs and rock songs of the day.
Yeah,
right?
Of whatever, yeah.
I did notice with yours, like you were saying, there is a little more grit to it. Like it's got a little more of that psychobilly feel to it, something like maybe, I was trying to think of like something like like Reverend Horton Heat would have done, sure. Who else? Like what's Low Straitjackets, that sort of thing. Yeah. So okay, do you find, okay. is there a surf scene? Like, where are you living these days?
No, there's no surf scene here. I'm in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Right.
Yeah. So you guys are the
there's no really surf music scene. I'd say that we're the only surf band here. We are the scene. No. But there is surfing here, believe it or not. In the months of like November to February, you can actually surf in the Great Lakes, which is just like where I'm in the middle of the Great Lakes here.
Right.
But it's freezing fucking cold. And like, I think you have to be fucking crazy. Like
surfers are crazy
to do that.
They're already crazy. Yeah. Surfers are crazy. If you tell them that they're somewhere that they like get 100-foot waves, they're like, all right, man, tow me out on a jet ski. Let's do this. Like, yeah. All right, you're going to fucking roll in with the tide. Like, but anyway,
none of us in the band surf, just to let you know.
So you're all posers. Is that what you're saying?
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
You know, that's the funny thing I was going to say is I always find it funny that all the best, like Canadian, well, I think it's kind of funny, like and ironic that, that a Canadian would be in a surf band, but like all like, like ska bands, like surf bands, like
reggae bands, whatever,
Yeah, they're all they're all in like landlocked, like Canadian towns, like the frozen wasteland. I think it's a little bit of wishful thinking, right? let's do something that sounds fucking exotic.
What it really comes down to is just like, hey, I like that style of music. Let's just play it. Like, sure. you don't have to be, from Jamaica or be Rastafarian or whatever. Like, maybe I'm being ignorant right now. Like, to be in a reggae band or something. It's just the music, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I would say that, Eric Clapton did, like, the lesser versions of Bob Marley songs, but, that's just me.
Yeah, for sure.
I understand what you mean, yeah. I think that's the thing that's, like, exciting about culture is the ability to share it.
That's true.
I don't know. That's just my opinion. I think when people are kind of crying like cultural appropriation all the time these days, they're doing is like they're separating people further because they make you go like, oh, I guess that's not for me. I'll leave it over there. And then you don't get to learn about anybody or their culture or anything, right?
Yeah, so, that's right. Yeah,
yeah, totally, I feel like, man, it closes more minds than it opens minds.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, be respectful. That's it, right?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah, and that's it. But I think you're safe with surf music because I'm pretty sure it was like invented in California by like white dudes, So in fucking baggy shorts.
Dick Dale, I think, was the
king of the surf guitar. Yeah,
was the guy.
Yeah, for sure, man, for sure.
Yeah.
Link Wray a little bit. I guess he's technically Native American, but I don't think he invented the genre by any means. Cool, man. Well, speaking about scenes and fucking playing punk rock and stuff, the album we wanted to talk about today was Milo Goes to College by The Descendants. So if you're down, let's get into it.
Okay. I really don't have a lot to say about it
I'm sure you'll have more to say than you think.
And that's the episode, everybody. See you later.
Greatest album. Peace.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, so Milo Goes to College is the first full-length album by the American punk rock band The Descendents, released in 1982 through New Alliance Records. Its title referred to the singer Milo Ackerman's decision to leave the band to attend college, and its cover illustration introduced a caricature of him that would go on to become the band's mascot. It was The Descendents' last records with founding guitarist Frank Navetta, who quit the band during the hiatus that followed its release. The album's mix of fast and aggressive hardcore punk with melody and cheeky love songs led to it being considered one of the most significant albums of the early 1980s Southern California hardcore movement. In the decade since its release, it has received positive reviews and been counted among the most noteworthy punk albums by several publications. Milo Goes to College has been cited as influential and a favorite by several notable artists and musicians. It is considered by many to have kickstarted the pop punk genre. Okay, so there you go. Milo Goes to College. That's the
one really knows his stuff, you know.
Yeah,
that's more than I know about the album. You know?
That's what Wikipedia knows about the album. That's but okay, so when we get into it at this point, I just have to ask the big nebulous question, right? Like, I think I put it to you, if you had to pick one album, you know, that was like the one that made you go, fuck yeah, I'm going to get a guitar, I'm going to go play music.
Right.
You said this one. And so the big nebulous question that's, you know, it's not easy to answer, but that's, you know, why we ask it is why? Why this album?
Okay, so first of all, here's a little backstory here. It's not the first Descendants album that I heard. And I actually didn't hear Milo Goes to College until I was later. I had already played guitar and drums and stuff like that when I heard this album. But I just thought it was it was an album with every song. Every song was perfect. And they were like excellent pop songs that were kind of, you know, angsty and punky at the time when I... You know, you're young and you need that like kind of angst and a sort of punk sort of feeling. I don't know. It wasn't the first album that I heard, but it gave me inspiration, I guess, to continue to play music and want to be in a band, you know. And make music like that. Like, I wanted to make music like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you. I'm in the similar boat. Like, I don't think this... I don't know exactly when I would have heard this album. I would have heard songs from this album before I ever actually sat down and listened to this album through. The two songs that always come to mind, if you say The Descendants to me, I always think of Suburban Home or Hope.
Right.
Those are the two. Right. The third one I think of is probably the first album I heard, which was Everything Sucks.
Yeah, that was actually the first. Well, it wasn't the first album that I heard. The first album I heard was Summary, mm-hmm. which was like basically like a greatest hits kind of thing.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, it was like a kind of a like an I don't know, what do you call it? An anthology.
Yeah, an anthology, yeah. I guess. And great songs on that album,
mm-hmm.
like the whole way. And then I bought, when I was a teenager, I bought Everything Sucks. And that was a huge one. That was like, whoa. And like, I even wanted to be like Milo Ackerman. You know what I mean? I remember being in grade 9 and I had to get glasses. And right. I was like, fucking sweet. I get glasses now. So I'm like one more step closer to being Milo, you know?
Like, just give me a tie.
Yeah, just give me a fucking...
I mean, how iconic, man, that they decided that as a little joke and a gift to that they do a caricature and put that just as simple as can be on the front of their basically every album. Like, there's a couple that don't for whatever reason have him on there, but like, I know that it's a Descendants record by just seeing that little doodle
sketch,
Milo.
Yeah.
And
I got a tattoo of it actually.
Oh, sweet. Oh, you got nice. A Milo tattoo?
I'm not going to show you, though, because it's on my leg and my pants are too tight.
But yeah, like, the thing is, man, the guy looks the same. I mean, his hair is a little lighter these days and in color or whatever, and you know. Yeah. But he's like a, I've leaned up to this. I was like, you know, man, I haven't not paid attention to the Descendants in a long time. What are they looking like and what are they sounding like these days or whatever? And man, he's still a nerdy guy. He's still a nerdy guy in thick glasses with a buzz cut.
He's like a biochemist or something like that, I think.
Yeah.
Milo Ackerman is.
I guess like the first thing that I would say about listening to this album, and what reminded me of listening to this album specifically, not just the Descendants, but like, you know, I got an idea of like the Descendants just from their image before I ever heard them. Because when I was getting into like the kind of music, like the bands that were always talking about the Descendants were like the California pop punk and skate punk bands, right? Like your NoFX's, Wagon, No Use for a Name, like
Heard all of that stuff first before I heard.
Yeah, me too.
The Descendants,
me too. I probably first heard the Descendants like on one of the like the Fat Record compilations. I don't remember which one, but like one of them, right?
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like in their like '90s iteration or whatever.
Or like the fucking, what do you call that? Epitaph, Punkorama.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe it was Punkorama. You might be right. Yeah.
That's where I'd probably heard of them before. Cause I, unlike you guys, I haven't really heard too much of them. So, but I know for sure they were on those Punkorama albums.
But I just remember mostly not listening to the album so much as like hanging out with friends and, you know, back in the day when we're like making mixtapes and burning like mix CDs and shit like that. Like, yeah, like I was saying, the songs that would always make it onto those would be Suburban Home and Hope. Would be the two like
Suburban Home, Hope, My Age.
Yeah. But it was always
and bikeage.
and Tonyage.
Bikeage.
And marriage. I love this little inside joke of like just adding to the end of everything.
It's
so funny.
That's a neat little thing too, for sure.
But the thing is that by the time I did get around to actually getting into the Descendants, I'm like, their image told me one thing about these guys. I was expecting, you know, people are like talking about like, oh yeah, these guys got, you know, pop punk going, they got California like hardcore going, that sort of thing. And so I had this idea in my head that they would be like some sort of like proto Blink 182 or something like that, you know, like,
oh yeah, no way.
No. And then I remember putting this on like years ago and being kind of really surprised by like how actually punk rock it is. You know, like, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and not even that. It's just the musicianship and, like, how fucking good that those players are in that band on that record. Like, they went through a few different members, right?
Oh, for sure.
But the playing on that album is, like, holy shit. It's a very, you know... lo-fi recording, I suppose, like probably what they could afford back then, you know, like they were probably 20 or something like that. But it says like how fucking solid and tight they are, like playing. It's just crazy to me.
So there's a lot of things that they did on this record that became like, you know, more established in that musical scene, you know. That at the time, and when it's really wild to think in like 82, you know, it only had been like not even a decade since, you know, punk rock really had been cemented as a genre, right.
Yeah.
And at the time of like, we've talked about this before, like we were talking about the Stooges on a recent episode, right? And like that, you know, how they get like kind of brought into this like proto punk, you know, like that idea, like somehow retroactively we get to go and be like, well, those guys, you know, they were punk rock. It's like, but punk rock wasn't on the radar. The word didn't exist to them.
Yeah,
right?
yeah not at the time.
They weren't making music that ended up sounding like this at all, right? It wasn't until 77, and then okay, suddenly we started calling bands punk. But even then, it wasn't just the Ramones. It was like Blondie and fucking Talking Heads were getting called punk. I even remember, I screwed this up, by the way. If anybody was listening to a former episode, I think we were talking about Propagandhi, and I was talking about how Punk Magazine had Aerosmith on the cover. I was wrong. It was the other Boston band. What was the other big Boston band at the time in the Ed era?
Big Boston band.
Yeah. Not named Boston, though.
I was going to say, was it Boston?
Not Boston. No, it during the era
like,
of
it was
of
like Golden
Age. Propaganda. propaganda like earlier years or something?
It might have been like, well, no, this is in the '70s, but like that they were so desperate to like build this scene of what punk rock was and find a definition for it, you know, that they were like accepting bands that if they were just a little bit edgy, you know, they could be punk, right?
Right.
You know, but by the time we get into like the early '80s here and the hardcore is basically taking a hold of like that. No, it's like the other bands went to new wave and we kept the Ramones and we kept like the English bands, you know, and
right,
said, okay,
yeah, yeah.
It's about short, fast, like hard riffage. It's about like, you know, three or four guys being able to do this in a garage, you know, as much as they can do it on a stage, you know, and do that in the studio, right?
Right.
This is definitely that kind of sound, right? This is like this. You put this record on, if you went to a show, I mean, as long as they were playing in time and on key, it's going to sound like this, right? It's going to sound like guys, one guitar, one bass, one singer, you know, the drums, and that's it. Like, you're not layering on top of layers, you know, there's not a bunch of tracking. It's like it's a raw sound. I'm sure they did take after take or something, like they just
they
were like, that's the take, you know.
Right.
Oh, for sure. Like, yeah, it wasn't just like go in and get out kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I imagine like a lot of bands did that in that era, I imagine.
Yeah, but what's interesting, but, man, is for sure you do hear it. You do hear that they're like, okay, but they're trying to bring a little bit of melody and some elements of pop to it.
Yeah.
And
that's what I love about it is that pop sensibility.
Yeah, and it's good songwriting, but it's good songwriting just with the edginess of like the hardcore punk, you know, that it's for like a young person, you know, hearing this record, this is more accessible than maybe like even some of their later stuff, later albums, and into like the later 80s and 90s or whatever, they leaned a little more into the hardcore. And I think hearing this record, if like your first introduction would have been even as something like Everything Sucks, which is a good one, like, you know,
yeah.
I throw it on. I think that's where a lot of people who hadn't heard this album yet, like maybe jumped on or who knows, like whatever. But if you hear the interviews or you hear the other bands talk about like, okay, Milo Goes to College, if that album didn't exist, then, you know, like the whole fucking Epitaph label probably wouldn't exist, right?
Oh, right. Or something, yeah.
Like, something like that. You go check it out. And it's like, what I hear here is it's so much more charming than you expect it to be, if that makes any sense.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, I think that also it was 1982 that album came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe, it could have been like a huge inspiration for bands, because they're writing like amazing songs, and you know, it was probably influential like to the, you know, punk rock scene at that time. I don't know. I wasn't around. I was born in 83, right? So like, I didn't sorry, I got my TV on here. I gotta turn it off here. I'm getting distracted. That old ADHD or whatever.
Well, okay. What's interesting, though, is we have a little bit of evidence about their scene at the time. Not only from, like, interviews or talking to people, but, like, okay, you know, just listening to this record and reacting to this record, there's a lot of songs on here that talk about, like, there's, like, the song, like, I'm Not a Punk.
Right? Yeah.
Which is so weirdly telling to me about how fucking is the, as much as things change, they stay the same, man. Like,
yeah,
they're already talking about fucking gatekeeping scenesters, you know, fucking people who have an idea in their head about what the scene is and who's a poser and who's not. And they're already saying in this album, they're like, fuck that. I don't give a shit about that. Anarchy or your fucking fashion. We just want to make like fucking music, you know. Like, don't come to our shows and trash the bathroom, you piece of shit. Like, you're fucking
and
ruining.
I think that's what maybe that's what punk is. You know, like, I don't know what punk is. Whatever.
No, but we could debate about what punk is endlessly,
like,
man.
Yeah, for sure. But I think that might be punk rock. You know, we're just gonna do what we're gonna fucking do. I'm gonna sing about girls. You know, and just with my friends, you know.
Yeah, so one of the first notes I made when I sat down to be like, oh, I should make a couple notes about this, is I said being anti-punk is the most punk you can be.
Right? Yeah, yeah, right.
Because when you think about it, like, there's so punk,
but then,
like, there's nothing.
But then if you're anti-punk, then what are you? Like, you know, like a conservative or something? I don't know.
No, but I get it. Like, yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, you don't want to be anti-punk per se, but like if you're saying you're not a punk, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you're just not.
Yeah, and these guys these guys were like they're that made them more punk, that they're like couldn't be care less to get like wrapped up in like not just like politics in general. They, you know, they were never, maybe like there's a few songs here and there where they're like, hey, shit's fucked up or whatever, but they're not like, especially on this album, they're not a political band, you know.
No.
Not talking about the politics of the scene. They're not particularly like angry about any one particular thing other than they don't like jocks.
Yeah, you know? You're right.
Like, you know, they're obsessed with girls. They sing about food. They sing about going fishing. They sing like, they're more relatable, man. Like, the things that they're singing on this album, the lyrics and everything, like when you get into them, you're like, oh man, this is just like hanging out with your friends. Like, this is just like young people stuff, right? Like, these guys, you know, obviously Milo going to college, he was of the age at the time that they were making this record that it was like, oh, I should probably get my shit together and go to college. So they're just out of high school, right? You know, it's not like this overwrought or like overly, like there's no like agenda, you know, to this or whatever. It's guys who are definitely just buddies getting together, playing music. They're having a ton of fun doing it. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, maybe they're getting out like some, like there's some angst and there's some cynicism on this album. Like, but the kind there is with a, like anybody that age. Right. Yeah. So
I don't think anybody in that band wanted to like make it a career. Except for maybe Bill Stevenson, who is like, you know, I think he's like one of, you know, he wrote a lot of the songs and stuff like that. I think he's the one that, you know, wanted to make it a career, and he did. You know, like
him and Milo are the only two who have stuck it out the entire time.
But it's like the Blasting Room. I'm not sure if he's a recording engineer or a producer or whatever, but he does the Blasting Room. I'm not sure where that is, but he's still doing it. And he made a career out of, you know, he started in the Descendants, did the Black Flag thing.
He was an original member of Black Flag. Yeah.
Yeah. No, not an original member.
An early member.
Yeah. He came on at like My War or something like that. And slip it in. I think he's on those two records.
Yeah. But he was playing in Black Flag before this album got released. Like, he was playing in Black Flag in like 80, 81 or something crazy like that.
Really?
I
don't know. I don't know. Like, I seriously don't know. But
yeah, I don't know if he was on the records, but he was playing with them live for sure.
Mm.
But that's what I mean. So think about it though, because I think, so who in the band were into fishing? Like, obviously, Bill Stevenson, I think, was, they were like working at a, he was working at a bait shop with, was it with Milo or was it with like Tony Lombardo or one of the other dudes?
I know that him and one other member were like into fishing. I'm not sure who that member was.
I think it might have been Tony Lombardo.
It could have been, like, I don't know, but I just watched that documentary. It's called Filmage.
Filmage, yeah.
But I watched it like a couple weeks ago, and that's how they got the name All, because they were fishing, and Bill Stevenson said something like, you know, we have to stop, we have to go home now, and or we have too much fish or something like that, and whoever it was, maybe Tony Lombardo, I'm not sure, he turns around, he says no. Oh, so you know, he's like, wants to get all of the fish, like, kind of thing.
Yeah, man, but it's weird that like a couple of dudes like working at a bait shop or whatever that were like really serious about fishing, like basically started off the whole Southern California like punk rock scene.
Yeah, do you guys fish?
a little, like, I mean, I've thrown a fucking, I've cast out a few, like, lures here and there, you know?
Right.
I've been fishing. I went fishing once, and I caught one fish. So I'm good.
Oh, really? Fucking, yeah. You're good.
Perfect track record.
I've got allergies to fish, so I can't eat it. So it's pointless to me. If you want me to go out and sit on a boat and drink beer, I'm fucking in. Let's go. But I don't need to fish because, like, what's the point?
Right. Well, also in Alberta, where the fuck do you fish?
It's all rainbow trout here.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
There's fishing. No problem.
Is there any water there? Like,
there's a lot of water here. It's all kind of like little puddles that are kind of stagnant, and the only thing that really does well on them is rainbow trout. But fishing, like, I don't know, it's fun to, like, throw a lure out here once in a while or whatever. I heard a quote from these guys once talking about, like, being asked about fishing and what fishing meant to them, and they're like, what's cool about fishing is that you can do nothing at all but be doing something at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah,
they're like, yeah, apparently these guys would go on fishing trips. Like, that's what, like, they would do for shits and giggles if they weren't gigging or playing or practicing or whatever. They would, like, yeah, just imagine these guys. Like, they're dorks, right? And that's one of the things about this album is that they own it. They own the fact that they're dorks. So much that they fucking put an album. Catalina is all about a fishing trip that they took together, you know?
Yeah.
And just imagine these guys, man. Like, they're like... They're like, fuck, we gotta go and fucking rehearse that new song. We got a gig or something like that. And they're like, all right. Like, they all fucking put their fucking fishing rods in the corner of their, like, the jam space, you know? Like,
they put them in the cases.
Yeah.
Like, they have cases probably.
Yeah,
for
totally. They got a tackle box, and, like, it's in the middle of the fucking jam space. There's like three tackle boxes just hanging.
No, I don't even think it's that, but they just had one case. They just take out their guitar and put the fishing stuff in the guitar case.
You got picks and shit and stuff in your fucking tackle box. Yeah. That's what I mean, though, is I think it makes it a little more accessible, right? Like, what's cool about this is, like, you were talking about before, is that you got glasses and you're stoked because now you're going to look like Milo. But, like, how cool is that? Is, like, because I remember one of the problems that I had with the punk rock scene when I was a kid. And you were living in Ontario at the time, right? Like,
yeah.
The 90s. So, like, but I'm sure probably the same problem with every scene is that you start getting into the music. Maybe you have some friends that are fucking skateboarders or whatever, and they start putting on, you know, some fucking NOFX or something, and you're like, oh, I love the energy, I love the fucking, you know, I love the power chords, I love the distortion, I love the fucking, you know, like, the fuck you to society, this is great, like, perfect for, like, but then, you know, you want to go to a show or something, or start to see some of these bands, or even go to a record shop and ask these dudes, and the attitude you get about how you don't fit in because you're a dork and you don't know, like, what you're talking about.
You don't know the bands yet or whatever. You know?
Yeah, it's so gatekeeper-y, and then, like, on top of that, man, then you get the fashion police who, like, oh, no, to be a punk, you gotta be fucking wearing patchy pants and a giant fucking green mohawk or whatever, like,
yeah, it's so weird, man. Like, that was never a thing really here in Sault Ste. Marie, because, like, I guess just, like, everyone just went to the shows, right? Didn't really matter. Obviously, you had your dude with the mohawk, you had the skateboarder dudes, and, you know, you had all these different kind of cliques, I guess.
What I'm saying is that once you really got into it, because this is what the first thing I noticed is, once I kind of, like, didn't let that kind of shit intimidate me and actually just went to the shows, fucking, that I was like, the first thing that hit me, I was like, I kept looking at all the bands on stage, and I'd be like, almost none of the bands on stage are, like, dudes who are worried about, like, getting the perfect mohawk or, you know, there's a couple of bands that are like, oh yeah, let's get our fucking Liberty spikes up and, like, let's make sure we got our patchy jackets on or whatever. But, like, the vast majority of the bands playing the music were just nerds, man. It was just like awkward dudes with glasses, you know, bad haircuts, maybe just wearing some fucking, like, whatever cheap fucking running shoes, not worried about wearing Doc Martens or some whatever. And then meanwhile, they're fucking blasting, like, hardcore tunes. And then you look in the pit and it's everybody in the pit who's more worried about, like, you know, having all the patches and having their hair up and, like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then I was
for
like,
sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. I get it. These guys are just here to make music or whatever. But if you were like a little bit like feeling like, you know, and you know, you still ran into those guys, man, who would fucking be like kind of. But you realized that.
Oh,
like,
man.
That's just insecurity.
At our age, dude, which is fine. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of maybe edit this out. Actually, don't even. Wait, is this live?
Yeah. Oh, we're live, baby.
Oh, shit.
Charlie, don't
no, no, we're not live. Don't worry. No, no.
I was just about to say something kind of ignorant, you know. Oh, just were about, you? Like, I'm just about like old dudes that are like still like dressing punk and stuff. But
no, that's fine, yeah. Man. Say it. Say it.
Just edit that out.
You didn't say anything.
You didn't even get there.
You didn't even get
just
there.
Just edit it out. All
don't
right?
Make more work for me, Jamie.
Just do, yeah, we no, don't edit well, shit, man. We're punk as fuck here. We don't.
Well, I just noticed, like, and it's just like a weird thing. Like, you know, you see these old dudes. You do see these old dudes that are like punk, but you know they don't necessarily look like it or whatever. You know, they have kids now and they just like look like dads.
Right.
Oh, but yeah, totally. The way, only way but, you recognize but, them is that they're, you know, still wearing Converse and they've got a CBGB's t-shirt on or something.
Yeah, something yeah, like yeah. that, right? But they're totally. All like, you know, they're all like dads and moms, you know? And you know, every once in a while you see an old dude still with a fucking mohawk or something like that. And it's like, wow.
Yeah, once in a while, you know.
It still exists. Wow.
I admire those guys for like the commitment. You know, like
take
good
this
for
chunk
you.
Out of here.
No. It's all staying in, man. It's all relevant.
Oh no!
But here's what.
I'm not making fun of anybody. You know, I just a disclaimer here. You know.
Yeah, no. It's all, man. It's all peace and love. But here's the thing, is so when you do like hear all these bands, you know, that would cite a band like The Descendants, like this is a fucking. You know, this is what do you call it? Like, this album is part of the larger punk rock canon. It's important, right? You know,
yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Like, if you're going to talk about the history of punk rock, you're going to talk about this album. You're going to talk about the Descendants or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but when you're digging into the music, and then when you've discovered that these guys were, you listen to the music and you go like, oh, they're dorks. They're dorks obsessed with girls and food, and they want to be a bear. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and well, the lead singer is like a bespectacled, you know, dude with like a buzz cut, you know, and it's like, how fucking unpunk is that at the time? Then you go, it validates that you're like, oh, it's not about fashion. It's not about like
right,
singing
yeah.
about politics. It's not about, it's not all, you know, in the 80s, fuck Reagan or whatever, you know, like it's also this, you know, this is valid too. It's got to be validating, you know, to a young person.
Like, I almost kind of see it as like a DIY kind of thing. Like, I almost want to say like that maybe punk is just like a DIY ethic, and that's fucking it.
Well,
know?
Okay. So for me, I didn't know much of anything about these guys. Like, I knew I've heard of them before, and I looked it up, and Punkorama 2, the very first track is Coffee Mug. And that's the
right,
song
right,
that
that's
I know
right.
the most of theirs. But I'd barely heard the other. I'd never listened to this album all the way through or anything like that before. So listening right. to it full through a couple of times. You
like the Punkorama album or
no, no,
or
no.
The
no. Milo
album.
Goes to College.
Coffee Mug on it. Oh,
no,
Milo
no.
Goes to College. Okay,
Milo
yeah.
goes, listening to this for this album for the first time, like all the way through a bunch of times. It's just like. Not knowing anything about the band, it's like, yeah, this sounds kind of weird, right? It doesn't sound like traditional, like what you'd expect, right? And so I went and watched a couple of interviews and things like that with Milo. And right. just to hear them talk about it, they're like, yeah, this is just what we did. We didn't set out to have an image, or we didn't have a plan. We were just some dudes who liked to hang out and jam and play music. And we did that all the time. And then we got all these songs and then we played them.
Yeah.
You know, like they're like, we didn't know shit about writing songs. We didn't know shit about music. We just played it and then did it live and then went away. Milo went away to college and they came back and then they were like, oh shit, for some reason we're a big thing. You know, like people really like
yeah,
it for
like,
some reason.
Yeah. Like I didn't think they had a career planned mm-hmm. in music, you know.
It was just their thing. They didn't go to sports. They didn't do the shit. Maybe they went fishing, but like.
Interesting point about that, Charlie, too, is that apparently Milo didn't even know the album had been released.
Yeah.
While
he didn't have a copy of it.
He didn't have a copy of
it. Oh, really?
A friend of his bought the album and was talking to him and was like, oh, dude, I got the album. It sounds great or whatever. And he's like, oh, shit, that thing came out.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Like, he had no idea. It just all happened in his absence while he was like, okay, like, you know, he did the recording and he was like, I'll see you guys later. I'm going to college. And at that point, the band was on hiatus. It might not have ever gotten together again, right? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they lost, you know, one of the original members because he was like, all right, well, if we're not playing, I'm out of here. Frank Nevada, who probably had a lot to do with this original, like this, especially the sound on this album, because he's playing, instead of playing just straight power chords, he's just doing a lot of down picking on open chords, you know,
or bar chords and stuff like that.
And it's cool because it's not something you expect, like at the time, especially, you know, hardcore. Like bands like Black Flag are, it's power chordy. It's like, it's a little thrashier, you know? Whereas in this, you're getting like, you're almost getting that, I don't know how to describe it, but like, there's a janglier sound, you know, that like fills out a bit more of the sonic, you know, like spectrum that you miss a little bit when you're just doing root, like
he's playing full chords, you know,
right?
Yeah.
And the guitar player on that album, I'm not even sure like who it was. It's Frank Nevada.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, those chords are just so full, and it fills it out like really well, I find. And the bass player with Tony Lombardo on that one?
Yep.
Yeah. The fucking bass player was amazing. As well. They just worked really well together. I find, fuck.
So because, you know? Frank is playing those kind of open chords and sticking almost strictly to riffs, there's very little by the way of like lead guitar. If there is any lead guitar, usually it's because he's mimicking what Tony's doing on the bass. Mm. And I noticed something on this listen through that I've never noticed before, but now that I've noticed it, I don't think like I see this connective tissue where I don't think you get like later California punk bands like NoFX or like Rancid, where they use the bass like almost like it is a lead instrument.
Right, okay.
Like we talked about on an episode about Rancid, how I'm like, you basically have a lead bass player in this band, right? Like these guys are getting away with playing like big open chords and stuff, and they're playing half the time. In fact, if anything proves it, if you listen to like Lars or fucking Tim, there's a lot of stuff of them just doing solo stuff where they're playing Rancid songs. And when they play them live without the drums and the bass, it's so like, weird, man. Yeah. It's like folk music. It's like, it doesn't have the same feel at all. The feel of that band is totally drums and bass, right? Especially that driving lead bass of Matt Freeman. But I'm like, I think there's a little bit of a seed of that, like relaying on a busy bass player to like kind of do almost a like do lead runs or melodic runs and let the guitar kind of chug away. Starts on this kind of album because you don't hear it as much on like a Black Flag album, but you hear it here.
You hear it on the first track, dude. Like my age.
That's how it opens.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then the drums and the guitar
and then the fucking snare comes in with this like crazy ass fill that you fucking not a lot of people can do, I guess.
But I can't.
But
even on a song like Hope, right, which is probably one of their more popular songs,
that's a huge one.
What drives it's a little more subtle, but like what drives the melody of that song is the bass more than the guitar by far, right?
Well, it's definitely the rhythm. Like I would say, like, you know, that whole dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Whatever that is, you know, that's the hook in the song to me.
Yeah. I know, you know? My day will come.
My day will come. I'll be there. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know. The whole song is the hook. Fuck it.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? Like,
but those elements of those, like, because like so yeah, like the whole album opens up with the like kind of eighth note run on the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right, like that we were talking about. Yeah. But it's not you know, like you hear that several times, not that run obviously, but you hear similar kind of things that the bass does throughout the album, and then every once in a while maybe everybody kind of riffs with the bass. I'm trying to think of a song that's like that, like probably what's the song about being
well my age, yeah, it's a you know, they follow that on my age for sure. Yeah,
for sure. And I Want to Be a Bear does the same thing. I'm Not a Loser. It's kind of hard to remember which songs are about which sometimes, because the way they name songs aren't necessarily like the lyrics that are going to be in the song. Like
right,
Tony,
right.
They just call it Tonyage because Tony wrote the song and they didn't have a name for it. So they're like, it's Tony's song. So then they
don't,
just like,
don't mind me. I'm going to take a pee here.
Oh,
but, I'm going to pee on the side of the toilet. So you don't hear it.
Let's see
right?
how this goes. Are all we right. picking it up? How good are those, Apple earbuds?
They're not very good. Imagine I just had like some sort of
oh man.
Oh dude, shit.
I'm glad we're on this side.
Okay. Oh man. Whoa. I'm peeing on the rim so you can't hear it.
That's like the move you do at night when you're trying not to wake up like everybody in the house. You're like, but then,
yeah,
but then
yeah,
because
yeah,
it's dark,
yeah.
you miss the toilet and just piss right beside it.
Yeah, that happens to me all the time. Actually, sometimes I'll take a pee and I'll aim like straight at the toilet, and then it'll just go off to the side or something. That ever happened to you guys? I don't know. I'm not the weird one, right?
The weirdest is in the morning. Yeah, in the morning when you go to like take a pee and it like goes off in like two different directions.
It's the wall.
Yeah, but you're like, I was trying to pee in the middle. Like, what the fuck, man? You gotta blast out the mustard plug first thing in the morning. You know, you get that.
Oh, Jesus. All right. I'm almost done.
It's taking you a minute. Are you pinching it off or?
Wait, I just shook it and now. I had like four beers, so like it's time.
Yeah, well, you were at band practice before this, right?
So
you're good now. You're done.
No, we canceled. We canceled today.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so you just drank beers.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, yeah, I did.
Okay.
You can't cancel the beers.
I get. Like, we've been talking about kind of the body of the album or whatever. The only other thing I wanted to talk about just, like, just songwriting or whatever is, you know, listening to it now and then also kind of following up with, like, some interviews or whatever, I had a totally different interpretation of these songs. Like, I thought Suburban Home was supposed to be kind of ironic, you know? Like, I thought it was meant to be, like, but he says no. Like, yeah. He literally wanted a suburban home. He was
really?
I sang that song because he's like, my home life wasn't that great, wasn't that stable. He's like, I wanted normalcy. He's like, I wrote Suburban Home because he's like, these are the things I actually want.
I didn't know that. I thought it was ironic as well. Like, I thought they were just, you know, making fun of those, like, you know, suburban kids that
used to go
to shows.
Well, that's the impression that I got just from, but I realized that the reason I got that is because normally the convention in punk rock is to do that kind of like crass, like, you know, sarcastic, you know, like,
yeah.
Mimicking people. So, so when you hear genuine lyrics, you never take them as necessarily genuine.
Like,
you
oh,
know?
He's taking a piss. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it turns out that no, Suburban Home is literally about like, yeah, I want to be stereotyped. I want to be like,
really?
Like, yeah, because it's like I don't have that. I think that everybody wrote on this album, and so I think in this case this is a Lombardo song. So this is Tony Lombardo. These are his words, but it's him at the beginning of that track saying that, like the little recitation there, like I want to be stereotyped. That's him. Apparently that he felt genuinely that way.
Oh wow!
Another
Tony Lombardo.
Yeah.
Was he the bass player?
Bass
in the
player.
Band?
Yeah. Yes.
And he was like 30 or something. And
well, he was
and
a little.
Were...
He was a little bit older.
And the other guys are like 17.
I don't think he was 30. He was like, but he was like a year or two out of like high school. So like they made fun of him for being like the old guy in the band.
Right. Yeah. Just...
okay. So the only other thing I want to bring up before we like kind of move on is, so the language, the lyrics on "I'm Not a Loser" didn't age so well. Hey,
no.
Any of the words that they said, but
well, you got to think that they're like kids, right? Like I said that shit when I was a kid, like when I was a teenager. You know, I used to like maybe I won't say the words, but I used to say those things, like you know, mm-hmm. and then you fucking grow up and you're like, wow, maybe I just shouldn't say things like that are derogatory towards you know certain groups of people.
Yeah, in this case, mostly like they come off as pretty homophobic. You know, here's the thing is that listening to it now, I was hit by a little harder. Where in the past, you know, just because of it's 2021 and you know the sensibilities of the day.
I don't think that they were homophobic. I just think that they just used that word as like you know an insult to people.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't think the members of the band were
definitely
homophobic.
Not.
I think that this song is about like this is you know kind of making fun of like the jocks or like going after the kind of like the
right.
you know the cool kids at school or whatever kids.
The thing is they were probably called homos or whatever. That's the whole thing
right.
in the song. They were probably called homos and so they retaliated maybe like in a song saying like you fucking homos or whatever. But like I don't think that at that time like. That word meant anything to them. Like even for myself, like, I mean, I've used that word like a lot of times, like in my teenage years, you know, and then you realize like, wow, this is fucking kind of stupid. Like cause my friend is a homo, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Quote unquote.
You know, you can't fucking like,
well, I think my interpretation of this years ago was more like, yeah, like you said, that these are the kind of things that they were probably called or that they, you know, they heard people say to them. And
possibly,
them
like,
back.
I don't know.
On this listen through, though, I got a slightly different impression. I think it's not so much that it's what they were called, although they probably were. It was more about what could you say to somebody that, like, would hurt them the most? You know, and somebody who's really insecure, you know, what could you say to a jock that would really like get him to try and punch you in the face? It'd be like, you know, yeah, say something like, you know, call him.
Say you're a homo.
Yeah.
Call him
yeah.
gay or something.
Yeah. And that would totally. Really get to him. Yeah. It's not about that you're actually.
That's right. Have, yeah.
Yeah. Any hatred.
Or so like not your dick is small or something.
Yeah. It's the equivalent of that. Yeah, like that sort of thing. Like, yeah. It's just another like, I fucked your mom, you know, like. You know, it was just the same thing that cuts right to the fucking bone, you know, that gets somebody fucking like right in the like the what did you say to me, you know, like
yeah, it's like they're calling the homophobes homos, right?
Exactly, that's the impression I got. So not to excuse the language per se, but you know, if I had to guess, that would be, you know, like just the sentiment, just the way it comes out, the like the vitriol of the words, just like it's. He's even the song is like, is a like, hey, fuck you, man.
yeah.
You know, it's funny because I'm like the guys that you're talking about are never gonna hear the song. right,
because
they're not going to put your album on. They're, you know, unless like they're trying to like get laid or, you know, and follow a girl to like a Descendants show or something like that, like, you know what I mean? So it's kind of in a weird way it's like it's safe, you know, it's like it's more cathartic to get it out that way, right? Because you're not
you know, like I feel like everyone felt safe at a, it's not like a fucking Gigi Allen show or something. You know, like, you know, you go to a Descendants show, sure, they'll say the word homo and use it as a derogatory term, but it's not, you know, it's not like a fucking Gigi Allen show or something like that. Like, you ever see that fucking dude? I'm sure you have.
Oh,
I'm not shitting on the stage and all that.
I saw that documentary. Hated. What is it called? Hated, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild.
Fucking wild, man.
Wild, like, man.
That was Todd Phillips' first movie.
Yeah, yeah, the guy who went on to direct The Hangover.
Yeah, and he did Joker, too, which I just watched the other day. That was a fucking amazing movie. Joker.
Yeah, no, it's definitely worth a watch. It's,
sorry to get off topic, but
No, man.
I've had a few beers.
You know? We're all about the tangents. So, I mean, that's most of my notes about the album. I think we've touched on everything about the album, like, itself. I just think it's, yeah, man, it's... I understand why everybody who was probably around at that time was going like, oh man, this record is why, like, I wanted to make music or thought it was okay to make music in a way. You know, it's like, if it was okay for these guys to go and do it and be punk rock and shit like that, then, you know, it's okay for anybody to go and be punk rock and do it. You know, it's like, it's not image driven.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's totally. Just, it's music driven. It's DIY music driven. Like, that's what it is. And so I think this is, I'm glad this album exists in not just like in the fact that the music on it exists, but it also exists in the timeline that exists. It's something you can point to like early to be like, yeah, man, like these guys, you know, set a precedent.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, for sure.
So if you are if you are a kid getting glasses for the first time, like, don't worry.
No, like, I was excited.
It's
like,
actually pretty cool.
I got the glasses, right? And I'm like, holy shit, I can't wait. And I tried to find on the wall, like, the glasses that looked like Milo's glasses. I'm serious. I did that as a teenager. I'm sure we all have done shit like that, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I totally... Like, I'm like, I can't even believe it. Like, I'm getting glasses. No, it wasn't that crazy, but.
So, okay. You were already listening to, like, you know, like we were talking about before, you were listening to the punk rock of the day. Did this, like, open you up to more music or different types of music?
Descendants, this album?
Yeah.
I don't know if it opened me up to new music. In a way, I guess it did, because I guess the record label was SST, and so I
picked the album up eventually and re-released it.
They re-released it.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so you know, the SST logo, like Greg Ginn from Black Flag, like started that thing, SST, and so maybe in that way, where it was like SST, I saw the label and you know, looked at other bands on it. I mean, other than that, like, I don't think it, like, made me sort of branch out into other bands other than that way, you know.
Okay, but did it have an influence on, like, the music you were, like, writing or playing at the time?
For sure. And I think it's just like the whole pop sensibility. Like, I thought it was okay to write pop songs and just very, very, like, you know, three chord, maybe, things with a melody over top, and not so much, trying to be like hardcore and dirty and messy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally get it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, when you think about, like, there's kind of like a savant, we brought this up on the episode about the Stooges Funhouse, is that, you know, like, obviously these guys have a ton of musical ability.
Oh, yeah.
But the way they come into it is it's not trained. It's not like they're, you know, like a disciplined, like, sensibility. It's not like they, you know, somebody took them aside and was like, all right, like, learn how to play, you know, like, here's a bunch of music theory, learn all this stuff, learn how to play all these standards or whatever, and then go and make
it. But I think they did that themselves, you know, maybe they weren't, like, you know, trained in it, like, with lessons or whatever. Maybe they were, I don't know. But I think that they just loved playing music and it fucking shows, I think.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know? Like, they got into a room together and they just made noise until that noise sounded good to them.
Yeah.
You know,
but who knows? Like, I don't know the fucking band, but
no, but yeah,
it could be like that, you know, and possibly like, I don't know. You've been in bands. You guys have been in bands, right? Like, and that's how it fucking works.
Half of the best,
like
you
your
make.
Band, like your band, like your guys' band, the Give 'Em Hell Boys. It's like, you guys started out just like fucking having like drinking beers and like sitting in your living room or whatever, you know, playing music.
Totally. That's right. Yeah.
And now you guys, like, you know, you guys are still around. You know, like, Jesus,
we're still hanging out and drinking beers, and
we're rounder than ever.
I mean, yeah, we've only like just learned a few new chord changes and a couple different rhythms, like, you know, like, it is the same thing. I mean, I don't think we've ever gone on a fishing trip together. Maybe we should do that.
Yeah, we should do that. You guys should come to Ontario, actually.
Better fishing, yeah, for sure.
Well, for sure.
okay, so. You know, but you know, like, I just wondered how much this had to do with you getting into all of these hardcore and thrash bands and stuff that you found yourself in for many a year, or still do.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I seriously do love the noisy stuff and hard shit, you know. I don't know, man. I don't really play any heavier music these days. When I first moved back here, I was in a band called Algoma, and we were like a sludge band, just like fucking gross, man, you know. But also it also had melody in it, right? Yeah. I didn't do any of the writing and stuff or anything like that in that band. I played drums, but the riffs were like fucking catchy as hell, you know. And if the riffs weren't like catchy and like didn't, you know, appeal to me, I wouldn't have been in the band.
Right.
Yeah. You know? But these guys were like, I don't know, they've been playing together since we were teenagers here in Sault Ste. Marie. And then when I moved back, they asked me if I wanted to play drums, and I'm like, I don't know, I'll try.
Yeah. Hey, man, you sat in on drums for us once. Actually, you were the first drummer
I did.
Because before that, we were like...
All I did, though, was like a fucking shuffle beat the whole time.
I know, but it worked. But here's what happened. I'll just give a little context. Was that at the time, we were trying to stick more strictly to this like bluegrassy, old-timey band thing. Right. You know, all the instruments we had were acoustic. Or at least that was the original idea. But over time, you know, just... trying to make gigs happen or whatever, like electric instruments just kept sneaking in to the band.
Yeah.
You know, everybody would show up at a gig and all of a sudden you'd be like, hey, where's your upright bass? And it'd be like, yeah, the thing's heavy to carry around, you know.
Yeah, fuck it.
You're like, okay, you're kind of killing. But anyway, long story short is we booked a couple of gigs at a casino, and they had a rule that we had to have a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
That was a rule. That's why you guys got me, you sons of bitches.
Yeah, no, they no acoustic band, no, I don't know, no string band kind of shit. They were just like, but there's got to be drums in the band. We're like, okay, I guess we have to have a drummer. So we got you on board last minute or whatever, and you were like, I'm just gonna hold the beat down. It'll just be it'll be like kick and snare and train beats all night. And we're like, cool, man, whatever. That's all we really need you to do. We just need to say we have a drummer. But here's the thing, is then when we were in that room and suddenly drums were in our monitors and like that kick drum on stage, you know, was like,
fuck you guys up.
Well, no, actually, because we'd been playing without a drummer for so long, we already felt like pretty tight, as you know, like we knew where the one was on every fucking bar. Well, right.
Yeah.
So we were hitting one hard on the one already. And then all of a sudden, when you have somebody who is just driving it home with that, we were like, oh, yeah, we don't need to be a bluegrass band anymore. We can definitely have drums.
Oh, nice.
So nice. And then since then, it's like
so bluegrass.
The bluegrass thing has been influential in our songwriting, but it hasn't been the end all be all. We've moved away from that, and we've like learned, oh yeah, like maybe we should bring in some fucking like guitar rock licks.
Guitar keeps getting louder.
Totally. Yeah, that's the way you gotta do it. Pretty soon you guys will have a fucking Moog.
Funny you should say that. We just tracked with a B6 Hammond yesterday.
Oh, nice.
Big
nice.
Organ, doing big organ on the new record. So yeah, actually it's got, I'll be to give away a little bit of inside baseball here, but a little preview to the record. Right now, the opening song on the record is called Bluegrass is Dead. Not because we don't like bluegrass, and not because it's like, you know, we're trying to make any real like punk rock statement about,
you know, the state of music. You have a K oscillator on it.
Yeah. but it is a bluegrass song. So, you know, I just thought it was nice. Little tongue-in-cheek way to be like to open the album up by being like, all right, we're gonna fucking throw this thing, this whole thing we've been doing on its head and see
right
where that
back
goes.
back to that casino gig, yeah, because I remember that was a really fun night. Dr. Hook was there. Dr. Hook saw you guys play.
Yeah, that's
hey
great.
So you remember that? speaking of drummers,
Dr. Hook was like
only two
around
of the original
shit
members of Dr. Hook were there, if we have to Ray Sawyer and I cannot not remember the other guy's name. Charlie, you're the Dr. Hook fan.
Not the other main guy though, because he wasn't. He wasn't with.
Yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah. Who was the other guy we met that night?
He kind of looked like he had gray hair. Did he have an eye?
Well,
patch
they were old. They were old. They were old.
No, that's Ray Sawyer for sure.
Did he have an eye patch?
Yeah, that's Ray Sawyer.
I don't remember who the other guy was. Okay. I just remember
you don't remember
Ray
the
Sawyer
other guy
and the
you
kid.
Were... Yeah, the kid. Well, the kid was the guy playing drums for them.
Yeah.
And he was the one that was way into us. He was watching us all night, and he was like, oh, you guys are great. You guys want to jam with the band? They're here. We got in town early because we came from, like, a fucking afternoon gig, and we just wanted to come to the hotel here and gamble. Those guys are fucking over there playing slots right now. And we're like, holy shit, Dr. Hook is here? They're like, oh, yeah, man, they've been here the whole time. And so they come over. And because he's like, yeah, we'll get him up on stage, man. We'll jam. It'll be sweet. And we're like, I don't know. Well, what would we play? And he's like, whatever you want to play. They can play anything. And we're like, okay, cool. Maybe we'll jam with Dr. Hook. I don't know. So he walks over. They introduce themselves. I mean, yes, Ray Sawyer is the one I recognized. I didn't recognize the other guy, but they're two of the original members of Dr. Well, Ray Sawyer is technically not an original member of Dr. Hook if we want to be real pedantic about it. But either way, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah, shake hands, say hello, whatever. And he's like, so what do you guys think? You want to get up and jam with these guys? They look at us. They look at him. Then they go, no, man, we're going to bed. They were just like, no, what the fuck? Jam, what are you talking about? They're like, all right, nice to meet you. See you later. And they fucking leave. Like, great. Well, we met Dr. Hook. Anyway, but Ray Sawyer has passed recently, right?
Mm.
Oh, really? That's the guy with the eye patch?
Yeah.
That was the guy with the eye patch, yeah.
For some reason, I imagined him having a hook for a hand.
Yeah, and he's a doctor, and that he's an actual doctor, right?
Yeah, that he's right. Got a PhD or...
Well, he had an eye patch, for fuck's sakes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just imagined, like, you know, like a pirate or something. I don't
pretty
know.
Pretty much.
Yeah, just like... Delete that.
I'm not editing any of this.
Edit that.
No, this is gold, dude. This is
obviously you've never listened to the show.
I'm
before.
Glad you reminded me of the Dr. Hook story. I don't know
no,
if we brought
I have
it up.
You sons of bitches.
Who was in the fucking? Who are the current members? Are they still touring?
I think
after they kind of split the first time around, they split into two, and Ray Sawyer. Had one version, and then I think was it something Lamontagne or something was the other guy, and he had his version of the because they were they you know they were in disagreement or whatever, so they kind of split off and did their own thing.
Oh yeah, I cannot remember. Oh, okay. The other guy we met might have been Dennis LaCroix or something like that. Yeah. Anyway, they weren't excited to jam with us, so. Don't meet your heroes.
So you guys asked them.
No,
if they would.
No. Their drummer
kid was like, "Hey, you want to jam with these guys?"
Yeah,
and they were like,
"That kid was like fucking like I don't know, man. If you, let's just put it this way, he was on a lot of Red Bull or something that night.
He was just
a lot of Red Bull. Eh?
He was he was just real excitable fella.
Excited,
okay, man. Here's the question I'm going to go around the table and ask, but having listened to it very recently, I don't know if you've listened to it, Jamie, you know, leading up to this, but Charlie and I did
listen to it recently. Yeah. But
okay, well,
go ahead.
I'll put it to Charlie first. Charlie?
Yeah.
Does it hold up?
I have no fucking clue because I didn't listen to it back then. You know what?
Okay, yeah, but that's not what that question really means.
No, I
okay.
know.
Change the question. Change the question. change the question. Would you put this in your record collection?
I don't think I would, but that's not
yeah,
to
you
say.
Would.
But that's not to say that I don't understand why it was important. You know, like I can totally see why it's earned its high scores and all that. You know, all its all the things that people have said about it. I just
the accolades.
Yes, that's the word I'm looking for. The accolades. But I just don't think that even when I was younger and just getting into punk and stuff like that, mm-hmm. I think it wouldn't have necessarily been an album that I would have that would have stuck with me.
Okay, now I was wondering what you were gonna say. Hold on, Jamie. I just want to say something. Okay. That I've noticed that when we talk about punk rock, every time we do a punk rock album, you're always like, "This isn't really my kind of punk rock." So I gotta ask you, what is your kind of punk rock?
That's what I was gonna ask him.
Yeah. Every album we do that's a punk rock album, you're like, and even the Stooges the other day, you were like, I liked it, but then there was saxophone on it.
I didn't like the saxophone on it. This is great, and I love the Stooges. Hey, I like their other albums. I just didn't like the saxophone in that one.
But I know you've got some punk rock in you. So like if you were to make me a mixtape of your favorite punk rock like bands or songs or whatever, what's on it?
A lot of stuff like
songs. Just a five song.
I don't know about five
maybe.
Songs, but I would have gone in through Misfits, Sex Pistols, Kennedys. Who else?
Bad Brains, maybe?
Not really Bad Brains, no.
No, you don't like Bad Brains?
And I definitely love the stuff that doesn't take itself seriously like at all. So like the, you know, like the Me First kind of stuff and obviously
and
things like that.
Well, that's funny though, because Dead Kennedys is like took themselves as seriously as a fucking heart attack. And then Danzig, fucking nobody takes themselves more seriously than Danzig.
Yeah.
Okay, but I'm trying to paint a picture here because I'm like, okay, but it still doesn't explain to me like where this album doesn't. Maybe I get. Yeah. All right. Well,
I think it was more of the like the hardcore kind of stuff. Kind of missed me.
Right. Like the Black Flag and the Dangle Abortions.
Yeah, I like some maybe. Black Flag, but I'd not like a ton. And
yeah,
then,
you like TV Party.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Like cheesy stuff.
To be honest with you guys, like I think a lot of Black Flag had a lot of bad stuff in my opinion. Like people will fucking like totally rip me apart by saying that, but I think a lot of, you know, like they had a lot of fucking like top notch songs, but they also had like a lot of like songs that were kind of just like whatever.
Yo, right. You guys heard it. Jamie's hot take on Black Flag is they were hit or miss.
Is the real headline of the album.
Honestly, I do like the band.
I know what you're saying.
As a whole, it's like they have a lot of bad songs and a lot of really good songs. Like, and you know, few in between, I guess. You know.
Yeah. No, for sure, man. Okay. Well, I'm gonna say for me, absolutely. Having listened to this album again for the first time in a million years, I was like, oh yeah, man, this should be in my record. This should be beside my Fugazi records. You know, like
that's another band with a lot of bad songs.
I know,
Fugazi.
But they have so that they have like
that's so many.
They have a few
ones.
like Waiting Room is still like to me like
that's
so
like a great
good. That's
great
just,
song.
It,
yeah.
It doesn't get better. Like you know, maybe that's a pinnacle of Fugazi. I don't know, but like the fact that they made that song, you know,
yeah.
The fact that Descendants made this record, because let's be fair, if we're going to talk about it, like there's a lot of half-assed. Mediocre Descendants that came, you know.
Oh,
years
absolutely!
Later.
I'm going to tell you right now. Actually, the albums Enjoy, and what's the other one? Fucking, I Don't Want to Grow Up. Like, I was not into those albums at all.
Yeah, fair enough.
But they have some fucking really good songs on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I mean, as a full album, it's like no, man. Like, I'd rather listen to Summary.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, you know, lightning in a bottle, man. Like it's, you know, like it's not gonna strike twice, I guess, or whatever. I think I mixed up my metaphors, but anyway.
Lightning in a bottle, it never strikes twice, you know.
Okay, but so Jamie, I'm guessing though your opinion is that it holds up.
Oh, absolutely. Like to me, yeah.
No, oh, right on, you know, man.
Well, definitely holds up to these to this day. Yeah.
Yeah, cool, man. Well, I'm glad you brought this album up. I'm glad that we got to listen to it. You know, it's always interesting doing these guest ones and asking people because I find that it's not always like an album by a band that people, it's always like the greatest hits or, you know, some like compilation record that people are like, the first time I heard this compilation record, and you're like, that's cool, I like that. But I like being able to talk about a band and like their album, like their kind of their statement and like, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So fun one to talk about too, man. So thank you again for coming on. The EP is Big Sun. The band is Dino Waves. That's available on Tarantula Tapes. Can you just go to like their website? Do you guys have a website?
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to plug while we're at it?
Well, I would say go to the Tarantula Tapes or Tarantula Cassettes Bandcamp. Tarantulacassettes.bandcamp or whatever. And get the tape from there. Because we don't have any anymore. And we only made 50. We only made 50 of them. So, and we gave a lot away at this festival. So like, we don't have any anymore. Tarantula Tapes probably has, like a shitload because like, you know, nobody really
nice tapes.
And it comes with a download code.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. No, I'm just giving you hard time, yeah, but
like
there is
a
scene. There's a real
thing.
There's a real scene right now for people who like physical media, and
yeah.
I get it, man. Like me and Charlie, part of the reason we started this podcast, or you know, got into this lane of what we're talking about, is because we just got into albums, like physical actual records, again, and it's been a lot of fun to consume music that way, as opposed to, you know, just playlists to Spotify and algorithms and shit like that. It's like,
yeah,
oh,
that's right.
You know, you sit down and you make a commitment to listen to something. So we're calling it engaged listening. And, you know, the cassette fits fucking perfectly into that, man, because the cassettes were all part of our childhood, you know, at least.
Well,
in our And I think
remember buying tapes, you know, I think my first tape was Appetite for Destruction.
Oh, right on.
For sure.
My mom bought it for me and it had lyrics in it and she would mark out the lyrics with a Sharpie, mark out the swears, but I'd still listen.
But you
to
still
it.
Listen to them. You knew now. You even knew like where to listen for
I
the swears. You're like, oh, swears coming up.
Here comes the good stuff.
Thanks for highlighting the swears for me, Mom.
Yeah.
Right on,
but,
man.
But yeah. Anyway, but the whole tape thing is like, I'm a collector as well. Like I collect, you know, physical thing. Even if I fucking don't even listen to it. You know, it'll often come with a download code, right?
Oh yeah.
Especially with tapes, you know, like I have a cassette player here that's like really old and I'm afraid to put a tape into it.
Well, I'll tell you something, man.
You know what I mean? Like remember the pain in the ass back in the day, like when you pull your tape out and it's like it's all like full of fucking like the tape is like coming out and it's stuck
and the machine's
inside of the thing.
Your machine's eating your tape or something.
You gotta wind it back up.
Well, here's the thing too, is that unfortunately the cassette world, as far as like quality audio equipment to listen back on, hasn't caught up to the vinyl world. Where the vinyl world, we've got, you know, we're spoiled with great brand new turntables, or people are still servicing older turntables. There's tons of parts out there. If you go to a garage sale and you find a good turntable, you can get that serviced.
Yeah.
You can get a new cartridge for it, brand new, and you can have it
right.
Put that into a decent hi-fi system and you've got beautiful, awesome audio. With cassettes, on the other hand, you have to find that vintage audio, because the stuff that's available now is all hot garbage. It's all stock from China. Most of it's mono. It's not even stereo anymore. There's basically only two or three components, and then anybody who's like selling a new cassette player is is just selling you like some, they're selling you a stock where they're basically, they're putting their plastic around that like stock piece. And but the thing is, it's not easy. It's harder to service that stuff because it's a lot more internal parts that you got to take apart. You got to find a lot of belts. You got to find a lot of cogs and things like that. So hopefully somebody comes along and sees that there is a market for cassettes and starts manufacturing like a decent hi-fi, you know, for playback, you know, like a modern one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But right now,
well, the
not,
thing is with,
there.
With cassettes too, like they degrade, like each time you use it, it degrades. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's not a very good source of media, to be honest with you.
No,
but
vinyl's
but,
the same.
Well, vinyl will last like fucking hundreds of years though. Like, I mean, it's probably the most.
Oh, I see what you're saying. A tape sitting on a shelf could just disintegrate sitting on the shelf.
No. Once you like a CD does that though.
Oh yeah, that's true too.
Like CDs do that, but I don't know if cassettes do that. The one thing about cassettes for me, like I have a cassette collection. You know, just because you know, like I want to support the bands if they have a cassette, whatever. I'll fucking buy their cassette, and I also go to you know the pawn shop or whatever and find a fucking sweet album on cassette. But I hardly ever listen to my cassettes because I'm afraid of degrading them by listening to them. So with the bands, like newer bands that do cassettes, I usually just like, you know, listen to their download code that comes with it kind of thing.
But you know, man, that tangible part of like owning a piece of media, you know,
I love
it. Makes it less disposable.
You know what I mean?
Totally. No,
holding it and listening to it, you know,
yeah,
whether I'm listening to it on its whatever format, you know, like holding it, looking through the book or whatever.
Oh yeah, I've done that with a piece of vinyl where, like, you know, I remember I was kind of between turntables, you know, and I was still buying the records, you know, because I was like, well, I'm gonna get a new turntable eventually, but in the meantime, like, well, I'll stream this record and I'll go through the booklets and the liner notes and whatever else.
Yeah, it's the best part.
It's the best part. Yeah. You know, it gives you a lot more ownership over a piece of media. Like you feel invested.
It's like,
in
this
it,
is right? mine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I own this.
Yeah. You know? But that also makes you a little more invested in that artist or that band, you know, you're more
for
likely
sure, yeah.
to keep up with them, you know, get them like, what's the next thing they're doing. Right. Where it's like, if it was just a song you heard like in an algorithm or whatever on some Spotify playlist or some Apple Music or something like that, it's like, you might like the song. You might even go and like, oh, I'm going to make sure I click like on that or whatever. But you might not ever listen to the whole album. You might never go and like, let me listen to what's on the rest of this artist catalog. Like, you know, you might not never do it. Right. Mm. But yeah, anyway. So yeah, everybody who's into physical media, go get Big Sun. Available on Tarantula cassettes or tapes or whatever. But I know for sure there's a store on Bandcamp that they have your music available. All
yeah,
right, man.
It's a Tarantula tapes or no, Tarantula cassettes.
See, this is confusing. I've got it up on my I've got it up on my screen right now, and the logo says Tarantula Tapes, but
the
web
URL
address is tarantulacassettes.bandcamp.com.
That's right. That's where you want to go.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
And they have a lot of fucking cool bands on there too. You know, like it's mostly like a punk rock label. They have B.A. Johnston on there. I don't know if you know who that is.
No, who's that? Just kidding. That's a joke.
really cool punk bands like Angry Spells. I think you guys should check those ladies out. They're ladies. and just like very witchy.
All right, cool. Yeah. Well, big plug for Tarantula
Witchy. Witchy, yeah, big plug there.
But you have to find them at tarantulacassettes.bandcamp.com.
Google Tarantula Tapes from tarantulacassettes.bandcamp.com.
Okay, we have a less confusing website.
and they have the Facebook and Instagram and all that shit too. So,
well, so do we. So do we. So if you want to follow all that sort of stuff. I call it the things you find with your thumbs. If you want to look us up with your thumbs, Charlie, how do they do that?
Oh, just go to l2lpodcast.com.
That's right. And
effects you're running there, man? That's awesome.
All right, we got a real serious audio setup here, buddy. We're not just running through our Apple earbuds.
No, I need that.
So, and then also, you know, Naomi's not here, but like I said, she sends her love or whatever. Normally, I would put her on the spot and make her try and remember the phone number that she never, ever, 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 ever has on hand. But I have it on hand. It's right in front of me. I wrote it down. It's 780-851-8785. Call in.
That's her phone number?
I'm giving away Naomi's phone number.
You're just giving me, like, Naomi's phone number?
Yeah. By the way, buttholes. Just send her buttholes.
That's right.
No, I don't think you can text it. You can only call
in. You got to call and leave a message, and then we'll play it on the show.
Yeah. You know, make it as creepy as you want. I don't care. Yeah. Like, just give us something to play.
Let's do it.
I know.
I could be pretty creepy. I don't know.
We're talking about all this like outdated media. I know a phone is just like that. Like nobody actually calls on these things anymore. But hey, listen, if you're into collecting records, if you're into collecting tapes, why don't you do something else vintage and fucking make a phone call? 780-851-8785. Charlie, you got anything you want to plug before we call it a night?
Sure. Hey, you know what? Go get yourself some Learning to Listen merch. Just go to oldmandesign.com and get yourself some t-shirts and mugs and all kinds of good shit. Oldmandesign.com. We'll get you sorted.
Hell yeah. And then just because she's not here tonight, I'll give her her plug. Go and check out Naomi's podcast, Dope Nostalgia. It's a 90s-centric nostalgia podcast. And then she's got Lee Aaron coming on. She's interviewing some fucking real like celebrities. I don't know why she never, you know, books any of them for this show, but that's okay because we don't need them. We got Jamie.
Yeah, there you go.
I wonder if Lee Aaron would take a pee in the middle of her.
That's like, the first pee on the show.
That's the first pee on the air. Yeah. So hey,
I'm the first pee.
Yeah,
yeah, you're the first pee. I mean, you're the first person who didn't say, "Hey, can I go take a pee?" They were like, "I'm just doing it right now." So,
well, it's because I just carry my phone around with me like all the time. So.
So, you know, normally I would say that, like, if you want the real content, you got to go to patreon.com/learningtolisten. That's where you get the bonus stuff. Episodes come up early. You really help us out by subscribing to our Patreon. But I feel like on today's episode, you got your money's worth, you know, without having to go to the Patreon. But, you know, maybe go to the Patreon and just see what else we got up there. Thanks, everybody, for listening, hanging out with us today. I think next week we're going to be talking all about Missy Elliott, right? Am I correct with that?
That's right.
Misdemeanor Elliott. I feel like that's her proper full Catholic name. Anyway,
shit. Can I be on that one, too?
We'll see. We'll bring you back someday.
just phone the number. Just call the number and leave a message about the...
Oh, shit. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
It's our next album on our Rolling Stones greatest albums of all time list. So, yeah. So, join us for that. And then, Jamie, man, thank you so much for hanging out with us today, dude.
Thanks, guys.
Good to see you again.
Yeah, it's been a minute. So,
Quinn and Charlie, it's been a while, man.
Yeah, keep letting us know what you're doing.
Great to talk to you guys.
Yeah, you too, man. Tell us when you're putting out new music, and maybe we'll have you back on the show sometime.
For sure, will do.
Okay, cool, man. All right, well, it's the end of the show, so I'm just thinking about, like, you know, when you're catching fish and you gotta fucking put them in a fucking newspaper, you gotta wrap it up. Look at that. I fucking figured out how to tie that one in. Woo!
The 1990s. The music was fun.
Yeah.
And then it got really dark for a while. A little bit anti-establishment.
But the next thing you knew, it was totally fun again.
So many artists came and went and left us wondering, what are they doing now? This podcast isn't about the heavy hitters who are still making millions. It's about everyone else. The ones whose careers didn't really leave that decade and kind of just still live in our memory.
So you mean Vanilla Ice had another song?
We all know what happened to Marky Mark. But what about the Funky Bunch? Who were the KLF? And why did Tammy Wynette record a song with an electro dance band that topped the charts? Two genres that specifically defined the 90s. What were freestyle and New Jack Swing all about? Did you know that Blossom star Joey Lawrence had a huge pop hit? Or that Alanis Morissette had a really hot pop career in Canada before Jagged Little Pill? Special guests will also be joining me to discuss the great era of glitter, grunge, thin eyebrows, hammer pants, and total ridiculousness. We're even setting up some interviews with some of the musicians that define the times.
Okay, so if you're older than 30, you might be sitting here going, man, I totally remember that song, but I have no idea who does that. Well, then you better listen and find out.
I'm Naomi Carmack, host of the Ultimate 90s podcast, Dope Nostalgia. You're going to be busting a move again, coming in early 2020. You want to follow us so that you know when we go live? Check out our Twitter at Nostalgia Dope, or you can find us on Instagram at dope_nostalgia. If you've got a question or you just want to be on the show, email us at dopenostalgiapodcast@gmail.com.